This is live special coverage of the Democratic National Convention from NPR News. I'm Scott Detrow. It is the final night of the DNC, and tonight, Vice President Kamala Harris will accept her party's nomination for president. Just a few weeks ago, Kamala Harris expected to be speaking on night three of the convention as Joe Biden's running mate, making the case for a Biden second term. Instead, tonight, she will take the stage as her party's presidential nominee. And the stakes for Harris are really enormous, but so are the opportunities. Because unlike just about every other presidential nominee in recent American history at this point in the campaign, many people still have not locked in a firm opinion of Harris. So we're going to talk about that. We are going to look ahead to that major speech. We're also going to have speakers earlier in the evening as well. At one point, the focus will be on guns, with remarks from gun violence survivor Gabby Giffords and Congresswoman Lucy McBath, whose son was shot and killed in 2012. Former Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta will speak about national security, but it won't all be serious. Pink is expected to perform. In a little bit, we're going to hear from the Chicks, and rumors are running rampant about other possible surprise guests at the convention tonight, though nothing is confirmed yet. I'm going to start with Mara Liasson and Asma Khalid here with us again from the United Center. Hey, Mara. Hey, Asma.
Hi, Scott.
Hey there.
No Beyonce news from either of you yet?
She's supposed to be coming.
Rumor mill has been really wild.
Well, we are journalists and we work in facts, so if either of you get any hot tips that we can confirm, interrupt our coverage to let us know. But Mara, I want to start with you and what I was just saying about Vice President Harris, how there's this interesting, unique moment where Americans are not fully locked in on what they think of Kamala Harris just yet because she's been on the national stage, but in the role of vice president, which is not first and foremost in Americans' minds, which is, you know, something that has frustrated dozens of vice presidents throughout American history. But given all of that, how do you think about this speech tonight and the opportunity that Harris faces, both positive and possibly negative?
It's a huge opportunity, but it's also a huge challenge. Just think about the nominees who have come to the stage in the past. Usually there's someone who had given a boffo speech 4 years earlier. They were considered to be rising stars in their party. Think Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. People had an idea of not just who they were and their origin stories, but also their talents and abilities. She ran a pretty, you know, lackluster campaign in 2020. She dropped out before any votes were cast. She did not have the benefit of running in a primary and introducing herself to voters that way and triumphing over her competitors. Instead, she comes here as pretty much of a blank slate. Now, that can be an opportunity. You heard many validators earlier this week talking about her and telling her story, kind of teeing up tonight. But this is for her, and her audience is going to be people outside the hall, people who are open to supporting her but know very, very little about her. Mm-hmm. And while she's doing this, the Republicans are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to define her before she can do it for herself.
And Asma, as the Chicks take the stage behind you and sing the national anthem, I want to talk about one particular aspect of Harris's biography, and that is her time as a prosecutor. It defined her public career for decades, you know, starting in Alameda County, then eventually becoming the San Francisco District Attorney, Attorney General of California. And yet, at the moment when you and I first started really covering her day-to-day, when she started to run for president for the 2020 campaign, she shied away from that key part of her biography because that moment, that was not something that a lot of Democratic voters wanted to hear about. It's been really interesting how that has shifted, and now Harris is kind of going back to that lane that she's always been in and leaning into her time as a prosecutor, making that case to bolster her resume.
That's right. I mean, one of the central themes you'll hear her articulate on the campaign trail is that she is a prosecutor and that Donald Trump, in her view, is a criminal, and that she has the ability to prosecute people like Donald Trump and take the case the case towards them. And the other thing you'll hear her say, particularly on Roe versus Wade, is this idea that this was premeditated, that he specifically put justices on the Supreme Court with the intention of overturning abortion rights. And look, I think we are in a fundamentally different political moment. The country is in a different political moment than right after the murder of George Floyd in the 2020 election cycle. At this moment in time, you know, one delegate here tonight, I think, voiced it in a way that a lot of Democrats are feeling. This person told me there feels like there's sort of Trump fatigue in the country. Yeah. And I think that is partly why this momentum, this convention to me feels very different even than the 2016 convention that we covered.
And Mara, that idea of Trump fatigue, because, you know, over and over again, at the end of 8 years of president, I think Americans are ready for a change no matter who the president is. This is the third general election in a row where Donald Trump is on the ballot. How much more did it crystallize that feeling when when it wasn't a repeat on the other side, when Joe Biden was off the ticket?
Oh, I think that was just huge, because look what happened. First of all, there was all this pent-up energy and enthusiasm that Democrats had, but we know that now an 81-year-old president who clearly had lost a step was dampening that enthusiasm. But also, remember, it was a race between two people that voters said they knew very well, they had made up their minds about, and they really wished there were other people running. Well, guess what? On the Democratic side, there is someone else running. She's new. By definition, she's a change candidate. She's African-American, Asian-American, and a woman. But also, the thing about the Trump amnesia, Trump was very unpopular when he left office.
Mm-hmm.
And then over the years, people thought of his time in office more fondly. The economy was pretty good. They kind of forgot about COVID. And what the Democrats have been trying to do this week, and they will be doing it in the weeks to come, is remind people of all the things they didn't like about him. But that's not Harris's job tonight. She has to talk much more about herself, because, and not just about Donald Trump. And don't forget, the big inspiring speech is not one of her strong points. That's not something she's known for. And she has a tough act to follow. She has both Obamas, who really gave very powerful speeches. She's got Oprah Winfrey, and she's got her running mate, Tim Walz, who did a really, really good job last night of energizing Democrats, telling his story, small town, DFL populist Minnesota governor, and we'll see if she can rise to the occasion tonight.
All right.
If I can just jump in here on this point.
Go ahead and jump in, but we might just have to cut to the floor in a moment.
Yes, yeah.
So you could have actually finished your point, but with the delay,
I was going to say that I think one major thing that the vice president's going to try to do tonight is to reintroduce herself to the public. And I do think that there has been a big distinction between being a number two to being the top person on the job. And what we've seen her try to do on the campaign trail is really pivot from being the deputy to being the top leader in the Democratic Party. And I think tonight what she's able to articulate is a real moment for her to do that. She will arguably have more eyeballs on her tonight than she's probably had in any I think this is sort of the most high-profile moment that she's had to date.
Absolutely. Yeah, the last convention speech she had was when you and I were standing around in socially distanced parking lots in Delaware in the 2020 convention. And people were watching from their cars. So obviously a wildly, wildly different convention this time around that Kamala Harris is addressing. We are going to see if I have accurate timing on who's about to take the stage at the convention. We will be hearing momentarily from a couple of young women in Kamala Harris's wife, her stepdaughter, Ella Emhoff, and her niece, Nina Harris. This is, Harris has talked about how important her family was to her, but we have seen this issue really rise to the top in the way that vice presidential nominee on the Republican side, J.D. Vance, has attacked Democrats as so-called, childless cat ladies. That certainly got a lot of attention. And seemed to suggest at the time he made that statement that Harris was childless as well. And you have seen the Harris campaign, Harris's family rush to her defense, saying she is a stepmother. She played a critical role in the lives of her two stepchildren. And that is an attack that has really boomeranged back on J.D. Vance and the Republican Party. And as I continue to walk up to these speakers, it seems like we've got just a little bit more time. So, Domenico Montanaro, I'm gonna go to you real quick and ask what you're looking for tonight.
Well, a few big kind of questions I have. Number one, can she meet the moment for a big speech? I mean, as Mara had noted, She really hasn't given a really big convention speech. You know, so it can be, as she said, a challenge or an opportunity. You know, this is one of the big pillar moments of a campaign. There are really three. One, when somebody gets in and makes their speech for getting in. Two, the convention speech. And three, the debates. This has all been very condensed for Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. which can be a good thing and can be a difficult one too, if she doesn't do it well. Can she carry the change mantle? I mean, it's very unusual for a vice president to be the person who's considered the change candidate.
Yeah.
Change is one of the most powerful, factors in politics. And if she can do that, that can really propel her in this race.
I think it's something like, in all of American history, only two sitting vice presidents have won election to the presidency because it's hard to be the new and different candidate when you've been part of the administration.
Well, and people voted for the top of the ticket,
yeah.
right? They're not necessarily there for the also-ran. And I don't just say this on the Democratic side. When I was on the floor of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, and Vance was named that day, I asked a lot of people on the floor, I said, you ready for Vance 2028? And they're like, we'll see. So, you know, it's not Trump, right? And it's not necessarily Biden or Obama. She has to prove herself as the person that you want to vote for. So far, she's off to a good start. Finally, I would say that, you know, can she lay out a vision for the country that a majority of voters can believe in and get behind? That's her challenge. She needs to be able to inspire not just this group in the audience, but also those remaining thin slice of persuadable voters.
I'm keeping an eye on the convention floor at the United Center.
Please
it seems like
Mina Harris, Ella Emhoff, and Helen Hudlin.
There you go. Let's take a listen.
Hi, I'm Mina.
I'm Ella.
And I'm Helena.
I grew up in Oakland, California, in a house full of extraordinary women. My mom, my grandma, and my auntie, who showed me the meaning of service, helping her sister, a 17-year-old single mom, fighting for justice for the American people, and still cooking Sunday family dinner. She guided me, now she's guiding my own children, and I know she'll guide our country forward.
Kamala came into my life when I was 14. Famously a very easy time for a teenager. Like a lot of young people, I didn't always understand what I was feeling. But no matter what, Kamala was there for me. She was patient, caring, and always took me seriously. She's never stopped listening to me, and she's not going to stop listening to all of us.
Kamala Harris is my godmother. To me, her advice means everything. Whether it's pursuing my passions, making an impact, or finding hope when the world doesn't feel so hopeful. She taught me that making a difference means giving your whole heart and taking action.
She's fighting for economic opportunity, LGBTQ+ equality, and reproductive freedom, because we are not going back.
She's fighting for social justice, health justice, environmental justice, and she isn't alone. We're all in this fight together.
So let's keep up the fight, let's keep up the joy,
and let's elect this extraordinary woman as our next president.
We're going to go now to NPR senior White House correspondent Tamara Keith. Good evening, Tam.
Good evening.
What's the last night energy that you're seeing in the United Center tonight? What's different than the first three nights so far?
Well, I can tell you that the floor filled up to capacity very quickly. And while I was walking around out there talking to delegates, one fashion trend came up very quickly. The women were wearing white. In honor of the suffragist movement about 100 years ago that earned women the right to vote. I spoke to one delegate who said she wanted to make sure that when Vice President Harris looked out into the audience, she saw white and knew that she was supported. Others talked about hoping that they finally could break this highest, hardest glass ceiling. But there's definitely People are excited, though also I will say exhausted and have lost their voices.
Convention life. That wearing white, that's something that Hillary Clinton really brought to the forefront when she ran for president in 2016. At least she wore white for, when she delivered her convention address, right?
She, in fact, wore white at key moments throughout her 2016 campaign, on big nights, winning primaries or at her convention. And, of course, she then wore white again at the convention here on Monday. So it's a theme, and it's something that women, through group chats and Facebook groups, sort of coordinated to do as they were packing to come here.
So that'll be a question tied for Harris, because I do recall that she wore a white outfit the night that, that Saturday night that she and Biden were declared the victors of the 2020 presidential election. Though we've talked all week, all election, about how Harris has not put first and foremost, though, the barrier-breaking aspect of her candidacy. Though that's something that I think in one of the more memorable speeches of this convention, Hillary Clinton did directly talk about really personally a few nights ago.
That's absolutely right. Hillary Clinton really put Vice President Harris in this long line of women, going back to Shirley Chisholm, going back to the suffragist movement, and all the way through to Clinton's candidacy as well. Of course, none of those women became president of the United States, and the delegates I talked to here are hopeful, at least, that this time might be different, but certainly they are also they also still remember what happened with Hillary Clinton, and that is, of course, how Donald Trump became president the first time.
Yeah. Shifting to a different serious topic, Tam. Another fashion trend we've seen is a lot of people wearing Beyonce-esque apparel due to red-hot rumors that Beyonce might or might not make an appearance at the convention tonight. What can you tell us about this important story that we are tracking tonight? Have you seen any hard evidence, any rumors worth sharing?
Well, I did see someone wearing a sash that said Cowboy Harris, in allusion to the Cowboy Carter album. The rumors are hot. Everybody is talking about it. There, other than TMZ,
it's not sure there's much.
Not been able to confirm this. TMZ sometimes gets things right. I am getting texts from delegates asking me if I know.
That's why I'm asking
various
you.
Delegations are apparently like taking bets. Right. The delegations are taking bets.
Yeah.
Some of them think it could be Taylor Swift, just to throw another name into this mix. But we honestly don't know. And convention planners are not telling.
We got about 30 seconds till a break, but that does get to a trend of the week, the real disparity on star power at these conventions. How do Democrats lean into the celebrity aspect of their convention so far this week?
Yeah, and I think that it is both a gift and a challenge for Democrats, because there's a risk in seeming too tied into the elite, and not tied enough to, salt of the earth American people. Republicans had Hulk Hogan, so far tonight there have been numerous celebrities, including Kerry Washington, who is talking right now. Democrats have sort of weaved the celebrity factor throughout, but it hasn't been overwhelming. They've also had very high production values.
Yeah, Tam, I got to pause you there, because we're going to take a break here. You're listening to live special coverage from NPR News. Stick with us.
Support for NPR's elections coverage comes from Sattva, committed to making handcrafted mattresses that help lull people to sleep and keep them sleeping soundly. More information is at SAATVA.com/NPR. And from Hiscox, committed to helping small businesses protect their dreams. Quotes and information on customized insurance for specific risks are available at Hiscox.com. Hiscox, business insurance experts.
Why is bluegrass growing in the desert?
Support comes from Bethelwood Center for the Arts, presenting Tedeschi Trucks Band with Little Feet and Margot Price this Sunday, August 25th. Ticket information at bethelwoodcenter.org. And new this year, camping and glamping on the historic site of the 1969 Woodstock Festival.
If it's happening here, it's on Radio Chatskill. Local events, local voices. Live local conversations 5 days a week. Radio Chatskill. Weekday mornings at 10.
Be listening tomorrow morning at 10 for Radio Chatskill with Tim Bruno. We very much hope to get live on air. Sullivan County Democratic Committee Chair Ann Hart will be working her way back from the convention that you're listening to right now. It's night 4 of Democratic National Convention special coverage from NPR right here on Radio Catskill. Thank you for being here with us for this special coverage. We'll be taking it right through until Kamala Harris has her speech. Thank you.
It's live special coverage from NPR News. I'm Scott Detrow, and we are covering the 4th and final night of the Democratic National Convention, the 8th and final night of the conventions that we have been covering throughout the summer, both Republican and Democrat. And we're going to turn now to White House correspondent Franco Ordonez, who's been covering the Trump campaign for us. Franco, good evening.
Hey, Scott.
All week, you have been keeping tabs on the counter-programming. Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have been having a much more aggressive campaign schedule than Trump has had for several months at this point, doing a lot of events, trying to keep tabs on this convention. You've seen Trump weigh in on social media in a lot of different ways about the speakers so far tonight. A major theme of the past month or so of this campaign has been Trump really struggling to find a clear lane to attack Harris and the Democrats on. Has that continued throughout this week, or have you been hearing consistent themes from Trump?
Well, I mean, for sure, Trump has continued to kind of struggle to land that political punch that they've been working on. I mean, he's been doing a lot of personal attacks, as we know and as we have reported. And his allies have actually really pushed him to take to focus more on policy issues, to focus more on the issues that they say or they feel are most important to voters. You know, and this week he has tried to shift some. You know, he's got a theme for each day of this week as they try to counter program the economy the first day, crime and safety. The border is today. He's actually on the border today. And, you know, and he also says that he's going to, you know, live tweet or live blog from his social media site as Harris talks. You know, as he's kind of struggled to find, you know, the right voice, the right line of attack, it has really been an area where he has failed or he has really not succeeded yet. He keeps trying different lines of attack, but none have yet to sink in. And actually, Harris and her campaign have actually done a pretty good job of kind of flipping it. Every time they try to land a punch, whether it's on Wallace's military record or something else, you know, the Democrats have been very successful at kind of turning that to their own advantage. It's been very interesting to watch.
All right, Franco, thank you. Speaking of other people watching this convention, just saw a post right now from President Biden on Twitter /X. Biden spoke the first night of this convention. Then he jetted off to California, where he's been on vacation, staying at a vineyard for the last few days and kind of leaving the political scene. But he just posted a picture of him and the First Lady Jill Biden watching the convention, holding their phones and saying he just spoke to Kamala Harris. We can't wait to watch her accept this historic nomination tonight. Just worth noting because of the way that Biden so quickly receded from the scene after Monday night, though, of course, you have had speakers throughout the convention, including former President Obama, really praising Biden for how he served as president and for the decision he made in recent weeks to step aside. We're going to make our way back to the floor now. We are hearing a video is playing right now before the next slate of speakers. This next section is going to focus on gun violence and Democratic efforts to pass gun control legislation. Of course, that is one of those bills that Biden did sign into law that had been long stalled under other presidencies, a pretty targeted, limited attempt to address gun violence, but something that's been really hard to pass. This has been, at one point, an issue that Democrats really felt it hurt them at the polls, talking about gun control, assault weapons bans, background checks, things like that. But they have become more and more and more popular with voters in recent years, and that's due to the fact that there have been so many terrible mass shootings throughout this country. So we're going to hear from several speakers coming up who have been personally affected by gun violence. That includes Congresswoman Lucy McBath, whose son was shot and killed. And then after that, we're going to hear from Gabrielle Giffords, who, of course, was shot about a decade and a half ago, a sitting member of Congress, I think now Lucy McBath is about to take the stage. Let's listen.
For every town,
please
for
welcome Georgia Representative Lucy McBath.
When I worked for Every Town for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, I saw firsthand the power of telling our stories. You've just heard mine, but there are many more to tell. On December 14th, 2012, I walked into Sandy Hook School. I stopped at the office, chatted with my principal, then started my day with my second graders. Suddenly, a loud crash, like metal folding chairs falling. 154 gunshots blaring. Hiding in the coats, trying to sing with my students, trying to read to them, trying to drown out the sounds. Terror, crying, running. I carry that horrific day with me. 20 beautiful first grade children and 6 of my beautiful colleagues were killed. They should still be here.
It's 10:30 a.m. at Robb Elementary in Uvalde. The school is recognizing my 10-year-old daughter, Lexi, for receiving all A's. She receives a Good Citizen Award, and we pose for photos. She wears a St. Mary's sweatshirt and a smile that lights up the room. 30 minutes later, a gunman murders her, 18 classmates and 2 teachers. We are taken to a private room where police tell us she isn't coming home. Uvalde is national news. Parents everywhere reach for their children. I reach out for the daughter I will never hold again.
My niece, Sandy Patrice, was 22. She drove to Myrtle Beach for sun and fun and motorcycle parades. Hours later, my phone rang. Shooting on the beach. No one can find Sandy. I stayed calm. You see, my mother, Patricia Ann, had been shot and killed by an abusive partner. I was calm then, too. I got to handling business. I called relatives, the police, hospitals, and I kept calling, voice steady, heartbeat pulsing. Then I was connected to the coroner. 10 years of waiting, and Sandy's murder is still unsolved. I'll keep calling. And I'll keep fighting.
I was in high school when my classmate got shot. It changed my story. Instead of worrying about taking a test, I started worrying about living to take another test. They say schools are for learning, and I did learn a lot that day. I learned how to run, how to hide and drop, that what happens in the news can happen to me. But I learned something else too. That we can write and must write a new story if we choose to.
Our stories of loss. But make no mistake, our losses do not weaken us. They strengthen our resolve. We will secure safer futures that we all deserve. We will organize. We will advocate. We will run for office. And we will join with Americans from small towns and big cities to keep our communities safe. And we will elect leaders like Kamala Harris, who won't just empathize, but will act.
This is Congresswoman Lucy McBath and others sharing powerful stories of shootings and how they affected them, either directly living through them or having loved ones, members of their families, the victims of gun violence. We're going to hear from somebody else who has direct firsthand experience of this next. That's former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords.
Former Arizona Representative Gabby Giffords.
Giffords is making her way to the lectern. She's accompanied by her husband, Arizona Senator Mark Kelly, who, of course, was one of the finalists for Kamala Harris's vice presidential slot. Kelly standing next to Giffords as she gets ready to speak, setting up an iPad for her to read off of. Giffords was, of course, shot in the head in 2011 in a horrific shooting in Arizona.
I was born in the great state of Arizona. I was born with grit. I grew up racing motorcycles, mucking stalls, and exploring the beautiful desert. I fell for an astronaut. For 5 years, I served in Congress from a swing district. Everybody called me a rising star. Then on January 8th, 2011, a man tried to assassinate me. He shot 19 people. He killed 6. Terrible, terrible day. I almost died. But I fought for my life, and I survived. I learned to walk again, one step at a time. I learned to talk again, one word at a time. So many people helped me as I worked hard to recover, including a decent man for Delaware who always checked in. He still does. Thank you, Joe Biden. Thank you for everything. Joe is a great president. My friend Kamala will be a great president. She is tough. She has grit. Kamala can beat the gun lobby. She can fight gun trafficking. Kamala stood up to Wall Street and the drug company. She will protect abortion access. She will defend our freedom. she's saved lives. Join me in voting for Kamala Harris! Bravo! Thank you!
Domenica Martinaro, that was an interesting moment. We just saw these intensely personal and emotional stories, and then it's always inspiring every time you hear Gabby Giffords come out and speak and talk about just how far she's come from that shooting a decade and a half ago. All of these speakers talking about gun violence and making a case for passing more legislation to try and rein it in, to get it under control. How has this issue shifted in recent years to one that's of Democratic advantage?
Yeah, I mean, obviously all these stories are incredibly touching, they're incredibly powerful, and they're incredibly devastating. You know, for a lot of people, having seen things like the Sandy Hook school shooting, seeing what happened to Gabby Giffords, and, you know, with the assault style weapons that were used in many of these, there's been a growing call from Democrats to say that those need to be banned, banning high capacity magazines. And I think we've seen an interesting try at this convention to sort of walk this line. Someone like Tim Walz, who declared himself a good shot, saying that he had won all these trophies in Congress and he was a better shot than some Republicans, all Republicans, I guess, is what he was saying. But at the same time, saying he's a supporter of the Second Amendment and yet would be in favor of banning assault-style weapons, something that was in place for about a decade. There's been a cultural shift in the country where Democrats, through activism, have really tried to sort of turn the politics on this and have to a large extent.
Please welcome three-time Grammy-winning singer-songwriter and global pop icon, Pink.
Going to go back to the floor now for a musical performance here at the DNC. As you heard, it's Pink.
We are searchlights, we can see in the dark. Rockets pointed up at the stars. We are billions of beautiful hearts. We sold us down the river too far. What about us? Said you had the answer. What about us?
What about all the broken, happy ever afters?
Oh, what about us? What about all the plans that ended in disaster? What about love? What about trust? What about
bit of a performance from Pink, and now I'm going to turn to somebody who knows a lot about politics and a lot about music. That's a national political correspondent, Don Gagne. Hey, Don.
You're interrupting my listening here.
Sorry to make your work and interrupt the concert, but I wanted to duck out of that a little bit early just to set up the next few speakers, because we're going to hear from a couple people who are on that bench of Democrats who have really gotten a lot of attention this year. And that is Mark Kelly, Senator from Arizona, Gabby Giffords' husband. You saw her standing next to Gabby, standing next to Gabby Giffords as she delivered that speech just now. He's also a border state Democrat who was one of the finalists, one of those people that Kamala Harris had a final interview with before she went with Tim Walz. What does Kelly bring to this convention? What does Kelly bring to the party?
Kelly, of course, his background as an astronaut, he is seen as a politician. He's a Democrat, of course, but he's seen as one of those politicians who's kind of in the mold of the late Senator John McCain, the late Republican senator slash war hero John McCain. And he is seen that way, too, by the citizens of Arizona who elect him, which also means he's more in the middle, he's more centrist, and it's important for the Democratic Party to show that this party welcomes, includes, and is really elevating to kind of star status people with that kind of a resume.
He's somebody who's had kind of a tougher line on immigration than a lot of other Democrats, and he will be campaigning for Harris in Arizona, one of those seven states that we all obsess on and is going to determine the presidential contest. Another state that certainly fits into that list is another area of Don Gagne expertise, and that is Michigan. We're going to hear from Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who's really seen as a superstar in the party.
And as, you know, as recently as, what, 6 weeks ago, she was certainly talked about in potential presidential terms. She was talked about as a potential replacement for Joe Biden on the ticket should he decide to drop out. Events moved very quickly. She pretty quickly, as all of that started, removed her name from consideration. She said she has a job to finish in Michigan. She is in her second term, just having won in a landslide 2 years ago. And she is, boy, it's hard to see a more important ally for the Harris-Walz campaign up in this blue wall than Gretchen Whitmer.
And Whitmer is going to be campaigning for Harris. Whitmer and Josh Shapiro did an event together in Pennsylvania a few weeks ago. Can certainly see them repeating that in Michigan and Pennsylvania, going back and forth as a national campaign plays out in those two states and Wisconsin as well. I think we're just about now going to Mark Kelly. So we're going to listen for that. Mark Kelly, Gretchen Whitmer coming to speak after that. Right now there is a video showing Kamala Harris giving a commencement address at West Point. That has ended. The camera is
panning
back on stage.
Please welcome Arizona Senator Mark Kelly.
And here's Kelly, who was just on stage a few minutes ago, accompanying his wife, Gabby Giffords, now back to speak as well.
Hello, Chicago. Hello, Democrats. So, President Obama had to follow Michelle. I had to follow Gabby and Pink. Gabby amazes me every single day. She was able to walk out and address you tonight because she's a fighter. And thanks to a team of doctors, nurses, and especially her speech therapist. We all need a team. I've flown into space 4 times. I've flown into combat nearly 40 times. Not once did I do that by myself. It took a team to accomplish a mission. It always does. I flew in the Navy during the first Gulf War. America rallied our allies to kick out a tyrant who invaded a neighbor. Today, Vladimir Putin is testing whether we're still that strong. Iran, North Korea, and especially China watch closely. What's Trump's answer? He invited Russia to do, and these are his words, not mine, whatever the hell they want. Vice President Harris has always championed America's support for NATO, for Ukraine, and for the Ukrainian people. On the Senate Intelligence Committee, she investigated Russian interference in our election. She defends free and fair elections everywhere. You already know how Trump feels about those. Donald Trump skipped his intelligence briefings. He was too busy sucking up to dictators and dreaming of becoming one himself. Trump thinks that Americans who have made the ultimate sacrifice are suckers and losers. If we fall for that again and make him the commander-in-chief, the only suckers would be us. Kamala Harris knows that standing with our allies means standing up for Americans. She'll keep modernizing our military to support our troops and to support our veterans like our next Vice President, Tim Walz. The world laughs at Trump, literally. But folks, it is not funny. When he was president, that meant the world was laughing at us. The threats we face are too serious. The sacrifices our service members make are too sacred. The alliances we've spent decades building are too critical. That's what's at stake now. And the choice isn't even close. But in Arizona and nationwide, this election will be. We'll win in the same way we launch rockets into space and land fighter jets on an aircraft carrier as one team on one mission. State by state, voter by voter, coming together. No country is better than ours at solving big problems. So, on November 5th, let's prove that America is still the leader the world needs today by electing the leader we need right now, Kamala Harris. Thank you, everybody.
There's Senator Mark Kelly. Thank we're going to hear from former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta in a moment. But first, we're going to go down to the convention floor with my colleague Danielle Kurtzleben. Danielle, in position in the middle of all the craziness. Danielle, this is the vibe report. What's the vibe down there? What are you seeing and feeling?
The vibe is excited, the vibe is buzzing, but also it's a mix of things, right? Because you have all of these people excited to see Vice President Harris, but also some really serious, somber subject matter. When you had those survivors of gun violence, parents of people killed by gun violence up there, things got very quiet and still, which is not something you get in a bowl full of people like this. But it was just an emotional moment for everyone. But
right.
You could just feel everybody waiting for the big event.
One more quick question to you, Danielle, because you were in this exact same position for us at the Republican convention on the last night on the floor, and that was the night you had Kid Rock and Hulk Hogan ripping off his shirt, among other things. Just how different has that experience been night-to-night, convention-to-convention for you?
I mean, I got to say, listen, the vibes of the two parties are different, but one thing that's very similar was there was a lot of confidence on that RNC floor, and there's a fair bit of confidence here, or at the very least, a lot of hope.
Yeah.
So a lot of positivity, really, in both cases.
All right. Thanks, Danielle. We're going to dip in now to Leon Panetta, who served as CIA director, defense secretary, was played in a movie by James Gandolfini, among other things.
Because nobody attacks our country and gets away with it. Nobody. That's what our warriors do. That's what our warriors do. Our warriors need a tough, cool-headed commander-in-chief to defend our democracy from tyrants and terrorists. We need Kamala Harris behind the Resolute desk. She knows a tyrant when she sees one. And our allies know a leader when they see one. on the Senate Intelligence Committee and as vice president. She worked with more than 150 world leaders. She's looked our allies in the eye and said, America has your back. Trump would abandon our allies and isolate America. We tried that in the 1930s. It was foolish and dangerous then, and it's foolish and dangerous now. Listen to President Reagan. President Reagan, isolationism never was and never will be an acceptable response to tyrannical governments. Never. Trump tells tyrants like Putin they can do whatever the hell they want. Kamala Harris tells tyrants the hell you can, not on my watch. She's worked with President Zelensky to fight back against Russia. She knows that protecting their democracy protects our democracy as well. Look, Donald Trump does not understand the world, and he does not understand the service and sacrifice of our military. Our fallen veterans are not suckers. They are not losers. They are our heroes. Kamala Harris will honor our veterans. And in Tim Walz, we will have a vice president who has served in uniform honorably for 24 years. Kamala Harris understands this moment. It is a moment of danger and a moment of opportunity. She'll keep America's military the strongest in the world, the strongest ever known. And she understands what our military is for. The role of our military is to defend us from foreign enemies. It is not to threaten Americans, and it sure as hell isn't to put immigrants in camps. Every president, since World War II, Republican and Democrat, has shared the belief that America must protect democracy in the world. Every president has honored our veterans and their sacrifices. Every president, but one. So we face a critical choice: to vote for someone who stands with our military and stands up for democracy, or someone who will disrespect our heroes and undermine our democracy. My fellow Americans, there is only one choice. One choice. And let me tell you something. When she takes her oath of office, as she will this January, our allies will cheer, our enemies will fear, and we will have a commander-in-chief that we can trust. God bless our veterans, and God bless our country.
Former Defense Secretary Leon Panetta. Up next, we're going to hear from Congressman Ruben Gallego, a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from Arizona.
Arizona Representative Ruben Gallego.
a dad, husband, congressman, and the proudest Arizonan you'll ever meet. But I am even prouder to be a Marine. Ruh! My mom raised us alone on a secretary's salary. I slept on the floor. I worked every job I could, meat packing, construction, making pizzas. I made it to Harvard with no money or connections. Other kids were happy because they were at Harvard. I was happy because I finally had a mattress. Then I enlisted, fought alongside my brothers with Lima 325 in Iraq. They called us Lucky Lima, but our luck ran out. We saw some of the heaviest combat of the war. And when we got home, the government failed to help us readjust. We have a duty to care for our patriots who serve our nation. For the Vietnam veteran in Buckeye who relies on the VA for his medication. For the Afghan veteran in Pittsburgh who finally got treatment for his PTSD. For the Marine in Milwaukee who relies on the benefits she earned. For my Navajo brothers and sisters to serve the Marines with me, I remember you too. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are fighting for them. Kamala Harris has delivered more benefits to more veterans than ever before. And she has achieved the lowest veterans unemployment rate in history. Vice President Harris has stood up for us and our families always. Tim Walz served for 24 years. His passion for veterans earned him respect on both sides of the aisle, and he stands with us too. In fact, let me introduce you to some of the many Democrats who understand what service means, because we put country over politics. We were proud to wear the uniform. And we're proud serving our countries in city halls, state capitals, the U.S. House, and the Senate.
So Gallego is being joined on stage. It looks like many, many veterans.
These veterans,
yes,
represent the best of our country.
I see Tammy Duckworth on stage.
We stand united as veterans, Democrats, and patriots to fight for everyone who serves.
Chrissy Houlihan from Pennsylvania, several other members of Congress who all served in the armed forces. Clearly, political response here to the Republican Party and critiques on national security and the Democrats.
Like Senator McCain, losers. John McCain was an American hero. Show some respect. Trump's Project 2025 will slash veteran benefits and force VA hospitals to close across the nation. Show some respect. So, for the 18-year-old who decides to enlist, for the families like mine who prayed every night that their loved one would come home, for our troops stationed thousands of miles away, for my Marines of Lima Company, let's elect Kamala Harris and Tim Walz, who don't just respect our service, but revere it. Because the veterans who defended this country aren't just the reason we can sleep at night. They're the reason we can dream. And together, we'll fight for our veterans and everyone who served our country. Thank you.
That is Congressman Ruben Gallego, who's running for Senate, joined by dozens of Democratic office holders who served in the armed forces, from Mark Kelly to Tammy Duckworth to several others, talking about the Democratic Party and its national security credentials. We are going to hear next from Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. We had previewed her speech earlier in the night. Governor of one of the most important states on the presidential map, wildly popular governor, high-profile governor, somebody who's talked about as a possible presidential candidate at one point. As of right now, though, Whitmer says she loves her current job and she's going to campaign as much as she can for Kamala Harris in the state of Michigan. As we wait for the stage to clear and switch over, Domenico Montanaro, interesting preemptive responding to, you've seen a lot of Republican criticism of Harris, of, I'll save that point till later because it looks like Whitmer actually
Michigan
is watching
governor.
It. You've seen a lot of Republican criticism of Harris, of, I'll save that point till later because it looks like Whitmer actually
Michigan
is watching out on, walking out on stage.
Whitmer.